What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Davidson Hang podcast, where I get to interview amazing people and help share their wisdom with the world. Let me know your takeaways and feel free to connect with the guests. I'm aiming to build a community around coaching, self-development, leadership, where people are not afraid to be their most authentic versions of themselves. You can find us on video by searching the Davidson Hang podcast on YouTube. Welcome and enjoy the ride. Hey, what's going on, listeners? Welcome to the Davidson Hang podcast, and I'm excited to bring to you my personal financial coach slash advisor slash financial concierge, as you would call it. His name is Prem Itharat, and he's the founder of Pi Capital Management. Excited to have you here, Prem.
I'm very glad to be here.
Yeah. So we were connected through Ivy, which is the social university, which was this really cool community where you met awesome people, amazing people. I still hang out and talk with a lot of people from Ivy. And a great community, learned a lot, met a lot of interesting people that are normally who I wouldn't have. And shout out to Catherine Sue for connecting us. If you're listening, you're awesome. And yeah, thanks for connecting us.
Yeah, it's funny how that works, because you just kind of connect with people and you never know where anything goes.
Yeah.
Right? You could be like lifelong friends. I mean, we've gone hiking and things like that. And it could lead to business or it could lead to nothing. And it's just great meeting people.
Yeah, Prem's a good guy. It's funny how we all sort of have our like preconceived notion. I don't know. It's interesting because sometimes when I meet people, I'm like, oh, I'm not sure. Like,
you're just not sure.
Yeah, you're just not really 100%,
yeah.
You know? And then, I mean, I don't really go into any relationship having expectations or anything like that, but it's cool that we're both so passionate about working out and hiking and nature. And yeah, it's been fun. We've been on hikes and it's great. Thanks for inviting me.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyone who's listening, I think you'll enjoy this episode because, not gonna lie, when we first met, when Prem and I first met, anything finances related, I was always afraid of just talking to with someone over. Like it just wasn't something I really thought about too much, honestly. And it's funny, right? Because it's like, you know, obviously I'm very intentional about like my fitness, my hiking, my CrossFit, and, you know, running and all this like other personal development. But for some reason, finances is one of those things that, I don't know, some people are just afraid of just talking about. And I was one of those people. And Prem really helped me just have like peace of mind and ease around the process. He's super nice. Like he doesn't make me feel judged or anything. Like I remember first going to him and I was like so scared. I was like, oh God, he's going to think I'm like a freaking wreck or a mess. But if he thought it, he showed it. Like I couldn't tell that he was judging me. So thanks, man.
No, not at all. A lot of people actually are similar. I think, one, they're afraid of the word advisor, and that's why I kind of use coach. I feel like that's more of a partnership. But I think everyone thinks it's just them, right? Having some sort of issue, whether it be credit card debt or just not having saved enough for retirement. They think it's just them, but it's not. And it really doesn't matter. You know, wherever you are, you start from somewhere. And if you're not a numbers person, like you're really great at sales and other things, but a lot of people just don't want to deal with numbers and they don't understand them and they push them away. And that's something that I'm trying to break down with people, is that you don't have to be afraid of it, but you can't ignore it either, because ignoring it is just, it's not going to make it go away, or it's not going to help you kind of get to where you need to be. So you're not alone. And I would urge people out there who just don't even know what to expect from an advisor or for someone who does this sort of for a living. And, you know, my kind of background, I came back from the hedge fund world after having spent years in finance, and I just felt so unfulfilled with what I was doing, you know, making good money for sure, but just wanted to help people one-on-one, and that's kind of where I landed. And that's where I started.
Yeah, and I think some people think it can be like quite expensive. And I know you offer like a lot of different services, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I do remember, like, I mean, you were very patient. Like, I mean, just even paying off credit card, which is something so simple, but, you know, I felt like you helped me break through like layers, right? It, like, there were so many layers that it takes more than one call, obviously. Like, we've been working together for over a year now, maybe 2 years. It's like,
oh wow, yeah,
easy to think.
It flies for sure.
Yeah, so obviously, like, you know, we've gotten to a place where, you know, I just bought my first home, and, you know, there's, and then, you know, you helped me save up for like an emergency fund, so that's going, like, an emergency rainy day fund, so that's helpful. And even just having a conversation about, like, you're like, hey, you know, like, yes, you can do all the self-development and buy all the books you want, but just plan for it, you know, like, just have a game plan. So that was helpful, just because I haven't really, like, thought about it like that. So
yeah, and it's true. I think, you know, because, you know, my plan is sort of, it is an unlimited touch kind of plan, where for $99, you just get me as many times as you want throughout the month. And the whole point of that is not really, it's not to make money per hour, because that's definitely not enough to make it kind of worthwhile, but it's really to build a relationship. And also, like, your life has changed so much over the past year, and a lot of people are the same. You can't say that your plan a year and a half ago was anywhere near what it is now. And so people also might think, well, I don't want to pay $1,000 for a plan that I may not even use. So, or they don't even know where to start. It's so much information when you go in, and I don't know if anyone's out there has been to sort of a typical financial planner or advisor, but they kind of they make you fill out a questionnaire more than likely. And then you're given sort of, hey, this is what you should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to more like, hey, how did it go last month? What are you, you know, where are we at versus the month prior? And I remember very distinctly, you were looking at everything on a daily basis, which is very uncommon, to the point where it was, you know, it was detrimental in the sense that it was just too much information.
Right.
And so, you know, you worked on bucketing, you know, more in categories, which is more manageable, and doing it more of a month over month basis. But
yeah,
I do compare myself to a coach, because, you know, when you have a gym trainer, gym coach, personal trainer who's there, you know, he's watching your every move, right? And he's adjusting as you get stronger or weaker in certain areas. And it's the same exact thing with, mm-hmm. With finances, but people don't typically look at it like that. But I think that's the best way people actually change for the better, right? It's about accountability, which is a key factor in a lot of different areas, not just finance, but everywhere, right? If you know someone's looking out for you or after you, you're more apt to do the right thing. And so, and it's okay to slip up, you know, once, twice, or whenever, however many times. But if you have someone at your back, I think that's really the important part.
Yeah, it's true. You know, when people ask me all the time, you know, I've recommended you to a bunch of other people, you know, I always say, you know, it's always good to, you know, similar to like when I go to a CrossFit class, like when there's an instructor there, I do a way better job than when I try to go by myself. When I'm by myself, like, you know, sometimes I'm on my phone, I'm like, you know, changing the, I listen to different podcasts. Like when someone is there, like I'm getting my at, like I'm doing work. You know what I mean? Like my output is way more. So that's the way I try to look at anything. I'm like, if I'm not an expert at whatever this is, and like you said, like I'd rather spend my money, I mean my time, with other things, like, you know, nonprofits and, you know, all these other cool things that I'm doing. So I'm like, why don't I outsource that to like who's an expert, who's like does this all day long, and then I can focus on the stuff that I'm good at.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of people get in their heads a lot, so they may just think this is the worst scenario, but after talking to me, not just to me, but like to anyone about their what they're worried about, they usually feel better about it. But especially when it comes to finance, I think people get very, very nervous about just being in a situation, whether it be like, I have a mountain of credit card debt. I had no idea how to get out. Like that is out there.
Yeah.
And, or like cash flow issues. Like I have small businesses that are clients and they may have a great business. You know, I have someone who has a $1 million business, you know, great small business, and still worries month over month kind of what the cash flow is going to be like. And so they worry if they have enough cash reserves and things like that. And I think that's more of a conversation / reporting / like we were doing before with categories and bucketing.
Mm-hmm.
Just having a comfort level to know, hey, now that I've saved, let's say 10 grand in sort of an emergency fund, you know, you don't have to worry about necessarily splurging on a purchase once in a while. It's not there for that, but something might happen. Your car might break down and, you know, the last thing you want to do is stress about it. So all these tools kind of help you get there.
Yeah, it's so true. I know when we first met, I had like no reserves, right? So when things did happen, like when my car did break down, I was like freaking out, right? So, you know, you definitely have helped me have like some reserves so that, you know, my car broke down again, right? The other day. So now, but it's less stressful because it's like, okay, we prepared for this. There's like some level of risk management that has occurred. So it's not so like debilitating, you know? So.
Right. Yeah, and even I know we talked about this more recently, but sort of the 401k/ retirement plan, I remember, you know, a year and a half ago, it was kind of not even there. And now, I mean, you look at the numbers and it's like, wow, like it's grown so quickly just by being persistent, right? Just by saving. And I think a lot of people, yes, there's a tax efficient way to do that, whether to do it in a 401k, an investment in the individual retirement, you know, account, an IRA or a 529 if you have kids. You just have to start somewhere. And I keep on telling people this, if you do it every paycheck, start with $25, $50 a paycheck, you'll be surprised how quickly that grows and how you really don't miss the money at all because it's gone. I think there's a human element, a human nature to kind of say, well, hey, there's 10 grand in the bank. Why don't I buy whatever, a new computer because I have money.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see that money in your account and it's gone and it's siphoned away into an account which will grow for you, which is kind of where we want to get you at, everyone at really, with passive income. So you don't have to kind of work so much, right? Your money works for you and you can generate income like that. I think that's something that I think a lot of people want to get to, but they don't know how. And a lot of people say they'll get to that when they have the money to do that. So yes, I will set aside money in my retirement when I have the money. But the problem is time is working against you, right? When you're younger, you know, if you're in your 20s or 30s, it's a lot better to set aside any amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But it is to start in your 40s or 50s and have to kind of make up that time because the money grows, like, you know, on average every year. So you want to try to invest that and make that money grow for you. You have time on your side. So I literally, when I was in college, I would save $50, $100 a month, you know, whatever I could. And that's grown tremendously. So it's anyone can do it.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like, what made you, because it sounds like you're multifaceted. Like, clearly you do a lot of NGO, like, you help out with, like, Rotary, you do PTA. It seems like you have a lot on your plate. So what made choose the route of because I know you do have an econ background, you have finance, like you went to NYU, which obviously is one of the best schools. So what made you want to start your own business versus like the other route that you came from before, which is more like the corporate route or even a big company, because you have that as well?
Right. Yeah, I was always a fan of numbers and spreadsheets, believe it or not. So undergrad, I did information systems, which was a major back then. Now it's probably like fintech, you know, more, it's basically informational databases. And back then databases were kind of just, I don't say on the cusp, but they were kind of like, that's what you were doing if you were kind of in sort of in between business and technology. So I had information's econ degree and minored in psychology because I just loved kind of how it was just so interesting to think how does the human mind react to certain things. It was just such a fun topic to think about. And so I didn't have a traditional sort of a, you know, investment banker or accounting background. And that's why I went back for my MBA 10 years later. And it got my MBA. But I, you know, to answer your question, sort of when I got to the point where I felt like I was good with money, that had saved enough to kind of not make it, not like be able to not work ever again, because that would kind of be the end game, but comfortable enough to take the leap to start a business. You know, that was 6 years ago now. And actually my interest in making an impact was the reason why. So like my wanting to impact individuals on an individual basis, one-on-one, working with people and seeing the actual change that happens when they're working with me, that was number one. And then all these other things that I wanted to do, all these community related activities and donating my time to, you know, now that I'm the treasurer for the Rotary, the Greenwich Rotary, I was the co-president for the PTA, I had started a nonprofit myself. There's been a lot of different things, but I think a common theme is just giving back. Like, what can I share with people? And, you know, more recently also, there's a Greenwich Young Professionals group, which I became president maybe 2 years ago. And then a new American Red Cross, they had a Young Patrons program in Westchester and Greenwich, which they just restarted early this year, which unfortunately with COVID, you know, has kind of stalled a little bit. Yeah. But, you know, I've been involved in a lot of different things. And I think that to me is a lot more meaningful than going to a job from 8 to 6 or 7, whatever it might have been, and making good money. But, you know, at the end of the day, what was it all for? And also having 3 kids at home, I think the work-life balance aspect really, really started to hit home. It was kind of like, what am I doing all this for if I get home and then all of a sudden my kids are, you know, they're going to bed, you know, what kind of quality time can I spend with them? And, you know, not to make this too personal, but my dad, I love him to death and he really provided for us, but he was a workaholic. And so he was working all the time, you know, it didn't matter if it was Thanksgiving, Christmas, every holiday, he would be that guy who would take shifts because people didn't want him, because they wanted off. So whenever everyone wanted Christmas off, he'd be like, oh yeah, no problem, you can have it. But he didn't, I don't think he really thought about his family too much in that respect, you know, in terms of time. It was more, hey, what can I provide for my family in terms of resources and education? He was all about education. Mm. And so like education for me is a very, very big thing. And so, you know, at the end of the day, if I can share my knowledge, especially with financial literacy, just getting people the basics, because I feel like a lot of people just don't have it, or they, you know, you don't learn in the school. And if you don't have people around you who are into it or know of, you know, different techniques, it kind of gets lost. And unfortunately also it's all it gears towards the lower income people as well.
Right.
But also the working professional, people who work, you know, make good money, still are not served until they have, I think, a certain amount of money. Because at some point then they become, I don't want to say targets, that's kind of a harsh word, but they become economical for an advisor to seek out, because they start to bring in a certain amount of dollars for them. But for me, as you know, like we started with nothing really, and we kind of built it up. And I really want people to feel that way as well. Like they can start with negative balances even, right? With credit card debt and all that stuff. And it can still work out and you can still build assets and you shouldn't be afraid to do it. And, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, they need the personal approach. And that's kind of what, you know, I think I really excel at, because that's who I'm just that person. I think I'm personable. You can be the judge of that, but I don't judge. Like, yes, I want what's in your best interest, but at the end of the day, you know, I'll make recommendations based on your own ideas and your own risk tolerance and what you want to do. And ultimately you decide what you want to do. And so I'll never make a decision for someone, but I'll present it in more of a quantitative way, you know, a way that I know how to read and, you know, what makes sense on paper. But at the end of the day, you know, it's up to you, the client.
Yeah. I was blown away because, like you said, you're clearly not making money right from the financial right? I mean, but obviously, like, you know that over time, right? Like, once you have a good relationship, the client trusts you, and, you know, as we start building a family, you know, like, there's, I'm sure, like, over time, right? So obviously in the beginning, it's not necessarily profitable. If anything, you're like losing money almost. You know that, like, you know, it's meaningful work. You're giving back to the community, and anything where you're being of service always comes back to you, right? And it's like not even intentional, but it's just like by being a good person, like, things will work out for you, you know?
Yeah, I believe in that wholeheartedly. I think you kind of do right by people, and sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't. But at the end of the day, I can sleep at night knowing that, you know, I've done the best for you. And if you can never kind of make people see it. So, but you can't chase it either. So I've just been of the type that just says now, like, hey, if you don't need it, it's all good. Like, you can do it your own style. We can have a conversation, and you can walk away with some information and say, hey, I think I know how to do that. Or you want to be proactive on your own and say, well, I can do this on my own. And that's fine too. And that's a net benefit for the conversation. And so I'm all good with that. I think it's really the underserved population of people like yourself who kind of are just coming out, who started to make really good money. But it's really people who are not being served because they don't have that net worth yet. And by net worth, you know, minimum starts at probably, when you go to a bank, they want you to at least have 100K, probably $250,000 plus to even be on the cusp of a wealth manager. And not everyone, but most of them make money by selling you product or services. And I have none of that because I'm a fiduciary. So what that means is basically I have to do what's in your best interest. And so that's also something I think that differentiates me from other guys. I hate doing life insurance. I don't do it, but I'll refer you to someone if I think you need it, who will be able to walk you through that and to give you a product that meets what you need. Because it does have a place too. Life insurance, all these different policies have a place. It's just not my thing. I just like to talk to people, have that sort of coach vibe, I guess. And then the other side of it is investments. So I love making investments for people. I love doing trading strategies and positioning. And some people like yourself are more hands-off, and some people are more hands-on, and they have views on certain stocks and they want to invest in certain companies, like sustainable companies, and that's all great. And I just help them guide them, you know, towards making investments. And that's really where it gets, that's what really, I think, makes me excited, is trying to make your money grow for you. Once you have a certain amount, it's just kind of like, well, let's invest in good companies. And there's so many ways to look at companies now. And a lot of people, I think, nowadays are trending towards sustainable energy and all those companies that are actually trying to make a difference.
So it sounds like, even with sustainability companies, like, you can still be profitable. Right. So
100%. I think at some point when it was transitioning, maybe like 10, 20 years ago, it might have been seen as a cost to companies, right? To do these things, because it costs more perhaps to recycle or to make less of a impact on the environment, a negative impact on the environment. And I think that's totally flipped. I think people will seek out product now. Because they are friendly to the environment. And that's, I guess, really, I think it's sort of that generation that's changed, I think, the way we look at things. And even now with COVID and everything else, I'm hoping that people are looking at our impact on the environment a little bit differently now, and maybe, you know, making some changes of their own. And so, yes, definitely profitability within sustainable companies is there. And I mean, I don't know if it's a great example, but Tesla, you know, that came from, you know, all electric vehicle company, came out of nowhere, right? Obviously Elon Musk is a genius and he's eccentric and he's got certain views that maybe I don't necessarily agree with, but he is a visionary, right? And, you know, look at that, you know, what he built from everyone who is saying, you can't build a car, that's all electric, who's going to buy that? And now you have him, but not only him, right? Not only his company, but now you have several companies, especially this year, it's been big for companies to IPO with respect to electric vehicles. I think he's leap years ahead, but he's created sort of an industry that didn't really exist before. Before it was kind of like, oh, well, it was kind of like what you were saying, like, oh, well, who will want a battery powered car, right? It costs more. It's less practical, you know, when you're a road trip or whatnot. I guess, like, who would want that? I think it's partially environment, right? You want to do well by the environment, but it's also, he's made it, the drivability, just fantastic. And so I think people are seeing that, but also they want to be green, I think. People want to be green. They don't want to make an impact on the environment.
How did you become so, like, giving, right? Like, all the nonprofits, the PT, like PTA, like the Rotary, like the patrons, like, was that instilled in you from, like, your parents? Or I guess, how does one even do all that stuff?
That's a good question. I don't know, really. Like, I think at some point, I want to call it my midlife crisis. I did end up buying a Tesla. That was probably like 6 years ago when it was at the very beginning. But it didn't start there. It was kind of like, okay, I'm going to do this because I can afford it and whatever. And then, you know, I just got to a point at my job where it's like making good money, but I also saw like a ceiling to it. And I'm like, okay, well, I've always wanted to invest and trade and do things that would make an impact. And it started out with people, like individuals, and sharing my financial knowledge to people, and just really seeing, like yourself, like seeing the actual change that transpires over the course of a year plus. And I just, once you do it, so I can't remember which was the first, but once you start doing it, you get a real sense of not only pride, but like, hey, I made a difference. And it's not only just the organization, then it's like people that you work with. So you're side by side with people who share the same exact, not the same exact, but they share a passion for whatever the cause is. And they're there selflessly donating their time. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like that connection that kind of instantly forms. It's just really odd. I think you have to experience it, mm-hmm. to kind of feel it. So I would urge anyone out there who kind of is on the fence about possibly doing something, you don't need to have a certain skill set to do this. You could also join a board of a nonprofit. That's a really good way to start meeting people, but also kind of making a difference at the same time. I would highly recommend anyone join a nonprofit board and kind of see and gain also experience on, you know, you have people who are there probably, you know, into their 40s, 50s, 60s, especially with the Rotary, right? There's a ton of knowledge out there. And you just get a perspective that's very, I guess, diverse, right? Because you have people coming from all over the place, but you congregate for a single cause. And it's a lot of fun. Or can be. It can be a lot of work too. There's no doubt. But that's when you can cut back. The PTA was specifically because I wanted to make an impact on my community and my kids going to school there. And the things that I've since learned about the school board and how the schools run and being able to kind of develop programming for my own, you know, elementary school that actually makes an impact on all the kids there. It's huge. Like, it makes a really big difference. And that, to me, I think is worth more than anything. And so I make a lot less than I used to make now, but I'm a ton happier. And I think a lot of people can get there, and not to kind of go back to passive income, but the way you can get there is you save up all this money, you supplement your income with money that's working for you. And once you have that, you can take less of an income from a job, or you can work part-time, you know, or you can start, instead of going for a private company, you can work for a nonprofit, which will more than not probably pay less, right? And so I want people to kind of get that sense that they could do the same thing.
You can share how much you want about, like, your father, but why do you think there are parents that, you know, prioritize, let's just say, providing for their kids? Because after a certain point, it's like enough, right? Like, was he like really, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's like the old school Asian mentality. Like, sometimes there's that like scarcity mindset where like they're just like trying to make up, you know what I mean? I don't know what it is, but it does seem that there are a lot of parents that it's like, well, how much is enough? Like, I'm sure there was enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think initially, you know, he came from Thailand back in the 70s, and he says, and I believe him, but I don't know, like, he used to, like, walk or bike 5-10 miles to school every day and, you know, wake up at the crack of dawn and study. And, you know, over there, you get tested into schools, right? So he had to do really well to get tested into a top-tier medical school. And then he came here with the $500 in his pocket is what he tells me. And, you know, he always says the journey of 1,000 steps starts with, you know, one, or something to that extent. and I think maybe it's something that he didn't have the money. Like, he didn't have the money. And so a lot of people get very personal about that. It's very psychological. Well, now I need to have a safety net. I need to have X amount of dollars in the bank. And maybe that kind of transcribed into, I can take care of my family if I can provide them with anything they wanted. And education was really his uh-huh. primary goal of providing for us, which he did, and super thankful for all that. And he's always very generous. And so, but maybe that was measurable. Maybe he just felt comfortable doing it. Like, maybe it's something that he, and even I see myself too, like, I don't know if I'm like the best dad. Like, I'm not like going to be super cuddly with all my kids at all the time. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, there are certain attributes that I think certain people are better for. I think for my dad, mm-hmm. it was, he knew he could make money. And he knew he just had to spend another hour at work or another day at work. And that was his way, I think, of showing us that he really loved us. I don't know if that just came off. Like, I don't know. You know, it just came out of my mouth. But I think that's probably part of it. Not that he didn't want to spend time with us, but I felt like he's always been under this pressure to provide. And that could have been instilled from his parents and his siblings and such. But I really do appreciate, I probably didn't appreciate when I was back in, you know, high school or even early days of college, but I certainly appreciate it now. And so I think I learned the balance, the work-life balance from him, because he was so extreme on one side. And I don't fault him for that at all. But at the same time, I think I'm like, well, if I work every day and make great money and I don't travel, I don't do this or that, then what is it all for? Because at the end of the day, you know, you can't go with it, right? So that's something that I think a lot of people have very different opinions on. You know, what is enough? What is enough? And I think a lot of people making less money, like lower income people, are happy. Like, they're happy. They're not, yes, they might be struggling, but they might be happier than someone making 10 times what they're making. And so it's really not about the money. Money helps, for sure. And I think some sort of baseline helps, and certain things help, like having basic healthcare and, you know, things that you shouldn't have to worry about, like having a home and food on the table, things like that. Everyone needs. And probably everyone should have a vacation once in a while. But I think it's perspective. You know, I think you have to think about, I've gone to, I don't know how many just random, you know, from Ivy and others, you know, speakers and presentations. But I remember one, it was probably last year, where it's basically happiness is what you make of it. It's how you frame your life. Like, you could have the same exact life, but think of it differently, and you could be really happy. And so that's why, to me, money is not at the top of the list. Yes, I do need it. I probably need it more, a little bit more than, you know, in the past, because I'm making a lot less. But, you know, I think it's not necessary to make such a large amount of money. And so if you do make a large amount of money, I would urge people to not try not to kind of upgrade your life, but start thinking about saving and investing first, and then kind of get the bigger house or apartment or get that car that you wanted. Start by making the money work for you while you have sort of the income to do that.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. I think most of us, the more money we make, our lifestyles like change, and then we end up...
It's natural. It's like a natural it's like instinct, right? I think human nature.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think many of us don't look like, I think many of us think that making more money will make us happier. You know, like I know some of my friends who they have so many properties and so many things. And quite honestly, like sometimes when I see them, like they seem very stressed out, like very, very, I wouldn't say miserable, but just like, it just seems like they're not able to relax. Like there's like a lot of tension. There's a lot of like sometimes anxiety. There's just a lot of pressure that they put on themselves. And then I see some of my friends, like you said, that are like average, maybe a little bit upper middle, like, you know, somewhere in between, right? And they seem like super content with life. Like they have friends and they're, you know, they seem pretty happy, you know? So it's interesting. Not to say there's like a correlation, but I definitely notice like, when is it enough? You know, like, because it does seem like the more, like the first house and then the second house and then the third house and then the fourth house, and then it's like a never-ending cycle, and then there's never enough. Like for them, it's just like you just keep going, and then sometimes they seem very miserable because they're like, I gotta collect rent. Oh, my client isn't paying me like rent, and like I don't know. Like it seems like they just have to deal with like a lot of stress, and I'm just like, I'm not sure if I necessarily want that many, like that much more added onto my plate. You know?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's internal. You know what you make of it, but also your peers, so who you hang out with will drive a lot of it too, because you say, well, oh, well, he has this, and then you're like, oh, well, I kind of want that too. It's just like a natural human emotion, I think. But if you're surrounded by people kind of at your level, you know, share the same interests, so you may say, well, I want to take 5 vacations a year because I love to travel, and that may make you happy, you know. And having one house and having that paid for and having kids, you know, like for me now, it's just, I want to be able to, number one, take care of my kids, right? And provide the education that my dad kind of provided to me, but also be able to travel. You know, do I need a big house? No, you know, like those, like you kind of change as you go. And so like, even when I was, you know, 10 years ago, my life was probably very different. My needs and my wants were very different than they are now. And so you have to kind of adapt, but you have to realize that, I think, yourself. And for everyone, it's very different.
Yeah.
You know, you give someone a $100,000 job, 10 different people will have 10 different ways of spending and, you know, working with it, and some will be happy and some won't. So it's kind of interesting, right? Because it's a number, right? You can quantify that number, but at the same time, it depends on kind of where you came from, what you want to do with it, and what your interests are. So it's very interesting. And that's why I think finance, and like personal finance especially, and I'm glad to have met so many different characters and types of people, but you kind of start, when you talk to people, you start to get a sense of all these different things. Like people are nervous because they came from nothing, and now all of a sudden they're making a ton of money, so they don't want to invest it because they want the cash. You know, I've had a client who had a ton of cash, but had credit card debt. And to me, it's kind of a no-brainer to you take it from one, you put it to the other, because credit card debt is one of the worst forms of debt, right? As you very well know, right? And so, yeah.
Yeah, I remember you really like helped me understand that, because I think like conceptually, sometimes like, yes, like you can get it conceptually, but then like, I don't know, I think something, I don't know why, but maybe it was like your patience, but it definitely like soaked in where I was like, oh, wow, like, yeah, like that's a lot. Like, I think
Yeah.
It was like $115 I was paying like every month just because I carried a balance. And like, I don't know, for some reason, like I didn't really like understand that really, because I just didn't really pay attention. I was kind of just like, yeah, I'll just pay it. But I didn't really like read the details and stuff like that. But then now I'm like, I try not to carry any balance, because like we have like it's a pretty big premium you're paying for that.
Yeah, and people I think get confused by the minimum payment. The whole minimum payment by credit cards is, I think, very misleading, because you can pay $100 a month for, and they have to write it down now. Like you can read it. It'll say, oh, you pay $100 for the next 27 years, you know, to pay off a debt of a couple grand.
Yeah.
And kind of like when you look at it from that perspective, it's like, well, that's crazy, because the interest rates are so high, right? 15, 20%. And so, but people don't see that typically. They'll see the $100 and like, oh, I can pay it $100. That's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be for a long time. So understanding the numbers is something that I help people with. And like you were saying before with mortgages, like I know we're kind of working through one now. There's a lot to understand with a mortgage and how it functions. And I think too many people just take the dollar amount and say, well, oh, it's going to cost me whatever it is, $1,500 a month. So, okay, you know, I'll do it. But they don't understand that just a small difference in interest rate could save them thousands of dollars over the course of a 30-year mortgage. And so the thing with that is that all the mortgage guys, you know, the people who lend you money, they have the interest in just getting it done, right? They just want the loan to happen because they get paid by that. And then you have the real estate agents who want to make sure that they sell the property, right? That the transaction happens. And so when you have those, you don't have an advocate for you, right? You have someone who wants you to do the transaction. You have someone else who wants to loan you the money to make that happen. But where are you in all this? Or you being the buyer or the person, you know, looking to buy a home. And so you not necessarily need someone on your side, but you ought to understand the mechanics of how all this works so that you can protect yourself, right? Because if you get so stretched that you can't afford the mortgage, or you can only afford it, but if you lose your job for 3 months, then you're in bad shape. You know, people tend to spend what they can. So I want to say it's overbuying, but they're kind of stretched very thinly. Mm. You know, you just want to protect yourself against getting stretched too thin without some sort of backup options, because, you know, a 30-year mortgage is for 30 years. A lot can happen in 30 years. And so the only one who ends up losing out typically is the homeowner. If, you know, if you lose your job and you can't pay, because the bank will just take that house and sell it. You know, this, of course, assumes that, you know, real estate prices are rising over time, which generally they are, not always. So I don't know. I just feel like I am that guy who you can ask whatever you want. And I say that to everyone, like anything numbers related, it doesn't matter, right? If you want to lease a car versus buy a car, like I'll help you, you know, walk through those numbers. If you want to look through a mortgage, I'll help you run through those. You know, if you want to look at your credit card debt, and yeah, I know we did some balance transfers and stuff like that. Well, we can look at anything to reduce sort of all that interest that you're paying. And on the flip side, you know, if you have cash that you want to invest or you should invest, I'll try to help you build it in sort of a most tax efficient way. The tax efficient accounts first, right? So if you don't have a Roth IRA, that's something you may want to consider if you make a certain amount of income, not too much. Or a traditional IRA again, and then so many different ways to set aside money in a tax efficient way.
Yeah, maybe we should have you back for part two, because I feel like there's so much more to talk about.
Sure, I'd be glad to come back.
Yeah, well, Prema, I really appreciate all of your support, and you know, I think this could be valuable for a lot of people who maybe are afraid of working with someone or just haven't really taken a peek under the hood in a while. You know, I think this would be cool. I'll link to your website, and you're looking pretty fly on there. So, you know,
just as me, I'm just usually casual and like just trying to, I'm not some stiff financial advisor. Not to say that they are. I'm just saying I like to be relatable.
Yeah, and you're very patient too, for sure. Like, I think the first couple of times, like, you definitely like took your time, and you know, like, you always like catch up and stuff first, like, right? So you're not like straight to business, which, you know, which,
yeah,
it's nice to have someone who cares. So
no, and I really do, and that's part of the magic, I guess. Like, it's sort of like you build that relationship, and the trust, you know, builds as well. But when there's trust, then you start opening up and telling me about everything. Because, like, people can withhold information, and I've had that happen before, and it's not the best for them. And it's not, like, I can't help someone if I don't know the full picture.
Yeah.
But building that trust over time, I think, helps. Like, I just can't give someone a questionnaire and say, hey, fill out these 30 things, and then I'll get back to you, you know? And it's also personality driven too. Like, I've gotten to know kind of your risk level, your risk appetite, and kind of what you like to do with money and things like that. And those are important, I think, for someone to get to know you on that level. It's not just taking this 10 grand and saying, well, I need to do something with it because it's Davidson's money. And I need to make it work for him. But it's about, well, what is Davidson like to do, right?
Right.
And so that factors into a lot of different things, because you need to be happy with the way you spend your money and invest it. And I think the only truly good way that happens is when we get to know each other really, really well. And, you know, I think that's lacking in a business that's all about numbers. And so I'm trying to shift that just a little bit, but also just make it less scary for people.
I do have a question though, right? Because I mean, at the end of the day, like with any business, like you have to be profitable, right? So,
yes.
Like, is this model right now, to be quite frank, is like profitable initially? I guess, like, is the goal kind of like, well, long term, like obviously it'll be profitable, and maybe in the beginning it's maybe not as green, but you know, like over time it'll be worth the investment, quote unquote.
Right. Yeah. So the whole unlimited model, which is like the financial coaching concierge model, can be challenging, but at the same time, it's meant to be accessible, right? I want everyone to be able to do this. And people spend money on a lot of other things that are not, you know, I used to buy Starbucks all the time. I do still go to Starbucks, but, you know, think about someone who's going 5 times a week, you know, that pays for this, you know, that's $25 a week, $100 a month. And it's not that it's not profitable, because I'm not really paying myself. That makes, like, I don't charge myself, the business, money for my time, because it's my business.
Right.
So the idea is really to just make it accessible to everyone. And over time, if I get 100 of people like you, it'll 100% pay for itself, right? The whole goal is, once people know also what they're doing, or they get a comfort level, you know, the coaching service is actually free after a certain time period, because your assets are at a certain level that I can say, well, you know what, I'm making money off of those investments now, you know, making money on your behalf, that I can do this sort of as a differentiating factor mm-hmm. that I don't think a lot of other advisors will do. So the whole thing is, yes, is it worth, it's sort of like I'm paying for that now, you know, in the short run, but fast forward 5 years from now, when, let's say, just making up a number here, you have $250,000 in the bank, uh-huh. you know, like, then, and hopefully it's with me, it may not be, but hopefully it's with me, and I'm investing it on your behalf, then I can make money on that, and you'll make money off of that as well. But then it becomes like, hey, well, I'm glad I kind of stuck with it. And I think there are a lot of people who share this sort of partnership method, where they know someone's got their back, even when they have nothing, possibly, that I think it'll open up enough doors that you are probably a prime example of someone making good money now and a good networker, which is always great. But, you know, this $100 a month is really not like, it's just kind of like a placeholder, I call it. You know, it's really to just give me sort of bare bones. But I also enjoy talking to people, and I enjoy, like, this is work, but it's also kind of like, well, let's see what Davidson's up to this month. Like, it's nice to hear from you, and it's really, I know we do stuff in between, but it's really nice to hear from people and to see what they're up to, but also to gauge, it's sort of like a checkpoint. So, like, every month, I can check in and say, well, where are you now versus where were you last month? And that's really, I think, key to all of this is, like, you need someone who's there, who's, you know, who says, well, you're slacking off on saving on whatever, or paying down your credit card debt, or, you know, I thought we talked about your 401k balance being X amount, but you haven't put in that much. You know, it's the month-to-month thing that I think really makes a big difference, but... yeah, if I were to charge for my time, it would be negative. But because, you know, it is my own business and I can do it without sort of the pressure of necessarily getting X amount of clients a month or whatever, I can spend more time with each client, but also really get to know each client. And over the long run, I'm pretty confident it'll pay off. Like, I'm looking 5-10 years down from now. I'm not looking at, you know, next year. And I'm hoping, again, that there are many people who share the same thought, where it's like, hey, let's just give them a shot, let's try it. And it's not for everyone, you know, not everyone's going to like doing this, but I think more often than not, people will kind of get a sense for it as they do it, and they'll say, well, yeah, it's worth that $100 a month. Like,
yeah,
it's like, I can go to Prem with whatever I want, really, like numbers related. And we also go there, like personal stuff, but you know, like a lot of it's all intertwined, right? So, I don't know. I enjoy it.
Yeah. And it was helpful, like just having a second pair of eyes on stuff. Like even this month, we went over like the 401k and LinkedIn's match, and like, you know, you're like, all right, well, this, the next couple months, you know, try to do it like 25. So then it's like free money. And it's like, oh, dude, like that's way valuable. Like, I mean, that pays for like
itself,
you know? So, yeah, it's just like little things like that. It's like, you know, I don't really necessarily like quote unquote have the time to read the fine print, but like if I have you, then it's like, okay, let's dedicate this time every month where like, you know, we're making progress towards something. So it's good just to have that, like the accountability. So.
Yeah, absolutely. All these little things that you have, like the 401k match, but also, you know, we would talk about, and I had this discussion earlier with a friend, like even healthcare dollars, FSA dollars, like I know it's small, but those are pre-tax dollars that you can set aside. And if you're going to spend like on LASIK, like what you've had, but some people haven't, or they have an upcoming procedure, or they spend on contact lenses.
Yeah.
Yes, it's only going to be 500 a grand, whatever it is, but you save basically 30% on anything because it's all pre-tax dollars. And it's not like you're doing anything, you know, really cumbersome. You're basically just saying, hey, employer, you know, set aside these pre-tax dollars because I know I'm going to spend it on, you know, medical related expenses. And so even co-pays are included. Like there's so many different things that you can do that people don't, it's not very interesting. I'll be honest. Like no one likes to read through all these things, but I happen to have gone through all of these things. And with personal finance, you know, since I was, you know, in college or even earlier, I just had an affinity towards it. And so I read about Roth IRAs when I was 18, 19, I'm sure. And started setting aside dollars then. And those are retirement dollars that are never taxed, you know? And so that can grow to whatever it may be, and there's no tax on that. And so even structurally, you know, you just do something and you can make a very big difference despite just, you know, saving the same amount of money. So yeah, I just want to make sure people are covered, but too many people, I think, just don't even, don't have an interest in it, so they don't look at it. And so, but you can't ignore it. Like it's something that you just have to look at,
yeah,
or get someone else to look at for you.
Yeah, all good takeaways. Well, we'll have to get you back too. But yeah, once again, thank you, Prem.
Thank
And
you for having me.
if anyone, feel free to reach out to him. Super friendly guy. He doesn't bite. And yeah, thanks again, man.
Right, awesome. All right, have a good night.
Good night. Well, that's it, folks. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe and let me know what your thoughts are. If there were any takeaways, I welcome all positive and constructive feedback and hope you enjoy. Stay tuned for more interesting stories and guests. Take care.
Take care. Take care.